Welcome back, everyone, to episode 2 of season 6 of the Shop Stool podcast. Thanks for all the support after last week. I sent you guys a couple of messages about it. It was pretty awesome. So thank you to everyone out there who listened in. You know, we got a few new donations. Thank you to everyone. It's amazing to see the support after we go away for these long periods and come back.
Yes.
And everyone's still super pumped.
Yep. Very cool.
So over the last week, I've received a couple of emails regarding a similar topic, and I thought we could discuss that today. It revolves around everyone's favorite hardware store / stores, the big green and red machine. Joey, your equivalent is Mitre 10, is that right?
Mitre 10, well, we do have Bunnings, they're taking over, so.
Right. Okay, well.
Yeah, Bunnings sort of came into New Zealand, what, 2019 or 2018 or something?
Yeah, I want to say something like that, and they've really ramped up their stores. They're everywhere. Yeah.
So
for legal reasons, should we call them Cunnings and something else?
Mitre Ben.
Mitre Ben. Yeah. I like that.
Yeah.
So to paint the picture for everyone who hasn't been in the loop, one of my videos that I've just published on my second channel where I talk about, I went and got some hardware from Bunnings last minute, jumped into Bunnings, picked up some bits with some hinges, some finish, that kind of thing. And I've got a few people messaging me in that regard. So the one message that came through was from Leighton Builds. Now, this was more just in general about Bunnings, so not necessarily about buying the materials that I bought. But he's come through with a message and said, "Hey, Robin, a topic idea for the podcast, Bunnings and their questionable dealings. So what steps could we take to use other suppliers in order to lessen our reliance on them? Whilst Bunnings is convenient, do you and the guys have any experience sourcing materials and consumables elsewhere?" So I think it's a great question.
A bit of context, because I know we've got a lot of American listeners as well and European listeners. So Bunnings is like the equivalent of Home Depot or Lowe's or any of those big box department stores. So in Australia, they're owned by West Farmers, I believe. Not sure about New Zealand.
No.
So they obviously have massive purchasing power and have just shut down everything else. I know Woolworths started a rival one in Australia. I can't even remember the name of it. That's how little time it was around for before Bunnings just crushed them. So that's the context. Huge purchasing power. They can basically control their pricing however they want. If somebody else comes into the area, they can lower their prices and, nobody can compete.
And it's interesting, actually. I wonder, this is aimed at all the international listeners. Here in Australia, there is a very negative sentiment towards Bunnings by
from some people. Like, I still think you're sort of weekend DIYer, like you know, your dad wanting to build something with his kids and stuff, still gets a buzz out of going to Bunnings and having a look around and maybe buying like a Ryobi jigsaw and then making some of his kids. So I don't think, I definitely don't think the sentiment is entirely negative. I think it's more from a professional perspective or for advanced hobbyists and things, I think that's when the negative opinions start to come in a little bit.
Because I wonder if it's the same feeling and sentiment in the US or whatever the store is in the EU. I wonder if that's an international or a global feeling.
Don't know.
Or if it's just a very Australian. Because I remember an Australian friend of mine once said to me, "Tall poppy syndrome," I think is what it's called.
Yeah.
Where Australians hate anyone who does well.
Yeah, I suppose there's a little bit of that, but. I guess the whole made in America thing disappeared in the 90s. Mm. And it did to an extent in Australia, but in Australia, we still have that whole thing about supporting, an independent craft brewery or an independent coffee maker or something like that. So the idea of having all our hardware stores controlled by one conglomerate, I think that's one thing that troubles Australians a bit. I don't know. What do you think, Joey?
You know, you said about other players not being able to compete, and I think it's only fair to recognize, though, that you're not typically comparing apples with apples.
True.
If you want the bare bones cheapest option possible, that's why Bunnings is popular. Money's tight. People yep. want the cheapest thing that's going to mostly do the job. If you want the best product for the job, almost certainly Bunnings or whoever it is, the box store, they don't have what you want because there's no way they can get the price to a price point which is even comparable, or it's such a high end, I'm not sure what the term would be, the product, let's say for example Blum draw runners, they just won't sell to the big box stores because they've got their own thing going on. They don't need someone like a box store to be selling them hundreds of thousands of units because they're doing it perfectly well by themselves and on their margins, on their terms. And so I think if you look at things like, I mean, it's a really good option. If you wanted to build a cabinet at home, you've got one choice for a draw runner, I think, at Bunnings. Like there's maybe two choices, awful, whatever it is, it's terrible. And you're going to be disappointed with what it is that you buy. You're going to get frustrated and throw it in the bin.
Yeah. My slow close hinges failed after 6 months. Admittedly, I have two kids, but still, it's not a good look.
Okay, the analogy that I would use is it's like Temu.
Yeah.
So anything that's just made of plastic, or it's a, you know, you see all the YouTube videos now about I bought these $500 worth of tools in Temu and I was expecting less and I got more. And it's like, of course, if there's anything mechanical in it or electrical, probably going to be lower quality. If it's like a plastic jig or, I don't know, a template or something like that, it's probably going to be the same. Yeah. And I would use that attitude with Bunnings. If I need a sheet of MDF, it's going to be the same. Like price-wise, it's probably going to be pretty close as well.
Yep.
A bit of aluminium trim, like something like that, that there is no variance in quality. But the second you get into, as you say, hardware, Joey, the difference is exponential.
Yeah.
So I don't have a problem with going to Bunnings for certain items.
Yeah.
I mean, obviously, I'd prefer to support an independent business. But for ease of just, you know, it's down the road, and it's down the road no matter where you are pretty much in Australia. It just makes sense sometimes.
I think, like Robin mentioned before, he had to run in for a quick thing, like spare of the moment. That's when I use that kind of shop. It's like, shit, I need this thing, like, this afternoon. I can't wait for a courier. I can't drive to the city. I've just got to go to the one that's close and get the next best thing. But typically, for like hardware is a huge, massive markup. If you're looking at a bag of screws, or screws is a good one to compare, like a box of 1,000 screws in Bunnings, like $60, $70. And if you go to a trade screw hardware place, you're looking at a box of 1,000 screws for about $25.
Really? Much of a difference as that?
It's massive.
Holy shit.
Like if you go and buy a bolt, you want like a 12 millimeter, 150 mil long bolt from the hardware store, you're looking at $15, $12 for one bolt. And if it's stainless, you can double that. And you can go to a hardware only fasteners place and get that bolt for $5.
Wow.
And they'll sell it to you off the street. You just got to go there, find it. And I've always, and this is a massive thing for me, like knowing who can supply you the best thing that you want. I buy my sandpaper from the company I bought my sander from because they just happen to have the best deals and a really easy shop online. I can buy a big roll of sandpaper for like $75. It's like 100 meters long roll for $75, and I get it in the next day. And you go look at what a 10 meter roll of sandpaper is going to set you back at a hardware store, and it's the shittest sandpaper ever.
Double-sided tape would be the other thing I would say, you know, like for a short roll in Bunnings, I think you'd be looking about $10.
Yeah.
And it will last you, well, depending on how much you use it for, but if you're using it for templates and things, it's sort of gone in a couple of days.
Yeah.
versus buying a 500 meter roll for $40, $50, and it'll last you for a year.
Yeah.
So I think especially when you're starting out on your journey like you are, Robin, I think there is that intimidation factor. It's the same as going to your timber yard for the first time. Like, you're like, oh shit, am I welcome here? Because, you know, I'm just a small guy. Do I need a trade account or anything like that? Do I need a ABN? And it's like, no, most of these places will be totally fine with you going in, no account required, and they will serve you, and they will deal with you because they need your business.
Yeah. Mm. And if you
Bunnings don't need your business.
No. If you say to these small companies, oh yeah, I'm in the trades, maybe give me an account form, because it would be good to have, but I'm not sure if I'm ready. They'll say, oh yeah, we'll just set you up on a cash account. And in fact, I'll just give you a trade discount because you said you're a tradesman. And so you're there paying cash and you get whatever it is, 20% off just because you said, or you make look like you know what you're doing. And they'll say, oh, hey, fine, have a cheaper price. I mean,
I think in like 12 years of business, the only people that I've had like actual trade accounts that I've had to sign up with are probably Hyphaly and Bloom. I think everybody else will just say, you know, you're a business, and they'll automatically give you that 5 or 10% trade discount.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, this was one of the other comms that I got from someone, which has sort of brought this about. There's someone sent me an email, Alfred, who was talking about suppliers, and I was quite surprised to hear this. Basically saying exactly what you guys are saying. There are places like Techform, Dorset, Nick Pol, and Arsha that sell Australia-wide. They will have everything that you find at Bunnings, but at trade price. If you have an ABN, then you can call them, and they will set an account with your pricing locked in. You don't have to have a 30-day account. You can still do COD, cash on delivery, and pay with your bank card. So thank you, Alfred, for that message. The idea of, because this has always been in the back of my head, why I've never bothered with these sorts of places is, yeah, I'm just a guy. I'm not a cabinet maker at this stage, in my journey. So surely people like that wouldn't even entertain my business.
Well, the thing is, though, that you want to be in the business for the next 20 years. And so how much are you going to buy from them over the next 20 years? And any business is going to say, yeah, pick me, please. I'll take that money over the next 20 years and we'll give you a really good price.
And it's not a risk for them to put me on their books.
No. Like, no, you're not ordering the kind of quantity. Like, you're not a massive builder or anything like that that's ordering 10,000 hinges who then might liquidate, like, halfway through the transaction.
Yeah.
Like, they want to give you a good experience, so then you recommend somebody to them and they get the knock-on business.
Yeah.
You're a much safer customer.
The only downside,
You go.
The only downside to some things would be like glue. I've got a specialty glue shop that I can, they're called the Glue Guru. And I can buy 5, 10, 20 liters of glue, but that's like 5 liters is probably the smallest amount I could buy, I think, depending on what it is. And so sometimes you have to buy more than you ordinarily would, but you're getting way better product than what you can get in a box store, and it's specific to what you might want it to be. But also, by the time you take into account you're getting a trade price, let's say you have to buy 10 liters versus 1 liter of glue, it's still a fraction of the price per liter, and it's, you just take you longer to work your way through it.
Yes, but you might, like, it's just that slight bit of inconvenience. So you might need to decant it into a couple of different containers.
Yep.
If it's going to take you 6 months to go through that glue, you've just got to take that little extra step.
Yeah.
But I'm totally with you on it. And this is not an episode about shitting on Bunnings. I think we've done plenty of those about other things, and we've had some pretty scandalous stories. I don't know if everybody remembers the dial incident.
Yeah.
with the scrapping of the dials. So, yeah, go back through the previous episodes to have a listen to that. But I think the most important thing is just trying to put power back in the consumer's hands a bit. And it's like, here's a way for you to get a better deal, like to pay less on something and get better service and sometimes an improved quality product for less money. So it's a bit of a no-brainer, but I hope that's helped answer the question anyway.
Yeah, I think it's very important that you add that, Brian, because there are some things that Bunnings do bring to the table that other suppliers can't. And whether that's for the right or wrong reasons, the reality is I have two kids. I like to do my shopping at 7 or 8 o'clock at night because then I have a chance to actually think and yep, use right. my brain. And so I do all my Bunnings on a Saturday morning is just that's the devil's place to worship, in my opinion. You go there. You go there at 7 o'clock on a weekday night and it's fine. So, you know, and again, maybe the other stores can't afford that because it's too much
overheads. And I know what you mean though, like especially doing a lot of renovations around the house at the minute, it's the same thing. Like I'll put the kids down and then fly over to Bunnings at 7:30 and grab some more plaster or grab some screws or something like that. Like it's convenience is king sometimes.
And another one is also timber. So I know that Bunnings stock a dressed timber, and they will almost always have that stock. It's only Tassie Oak that I'm referring to. But if I'm building out of Tassie Oak, I know that I can go there to get that dressed timber.
Yep.
Whereas the timber supply that I like to use just up the road, they've got 1,000 different timbers, which is great. But if I am 3 months into a job, I might not have bought that timber 3 months ago that I need. Now I can go to Bunnings and I know it's going to be there. Again, it's just the way it is, but there's that certainty.
Yeah. But you do feel slightly dirty inside.
Oh, of course.
Yeah. Of course I do. That's one of the downsides, I think, to working with what I guess we'll call regular 9-to-5 businesses is that they are open 8 or 9 to 5. And if you're late or not planned, if you haven't planned out your jobs and you haven't allowed the time for them to pull what you need and get it on the courier, then you are kind of stuck twiddling your thumbs waiting for your supplies to arrive, and you can't just shoot out in the weekend because there's no one there.
Or if you're a hobbyist and you work full-time job midweek, then there's apart from getting stuff delivered, but you can't really go in and have a browse and have a chat to people. So
you go Joe.
I was just going to say, and you'll find that these more specialty shops that cater for our industry often don't actually want you there in the warehouse because they don't have a showroom as such. Mm-hmm. They just have a warehouse and a couple of people in the office. And they would rather you just order off the catalog or order off the website, and which makes it a bit tricky for your first time because I know what it's like to want to hold that piece of hardware in your hand and just measure it because you don't trust the drawings. But eventually you get used to the fact that the drawings are accurate. If you're paying decent money for a good product, the drawings are also accurate.
So, that was going to be a bit of – I'm looking for practical advice here for myself and anyone listening. One of the – in that video, one of the pieces that I was buying was a hinge, and I needed that – one of the leaves of that hinge to fit on a 19 mil board. Right. Now, if I look at a 70 mil or 90 mil hinge, I don't know what the size of that leaf is. So how am I going to know if it's going to be centered? But if I go to Bunnings, I can tell. So how do you get around that with suppliers?
Well, you're talking about a butt hinge specifically. I would never use one, so I couldn't tell you.
It's trial and error, Robin.
It's experience. That's an experience.
Getting used to it. Say a knife hinge or something like that. It's literally you buy the hardware and then you have to fit your door around the hardware, not the other way around.
Yes. Okay. And we've talked about this before. Like if you've got a job like making a bed or something, a bed with drawers underneath it, the first thing I do is buy the drawers, assemble one of them and work out how big it actually is. And then I'll go and make my final design around what I've actually got. Otherwise you're going to be up shit creek.
Yeah. Okay. So focus on the parts that you can't change.
That's exactly right.
Build around
you're
that.
Governed by the hardware and 90% of applications. Like, you can only do so much.
Out of interest, if you don't use a butt hinge, what hinge would you use?
Any other hinge.
why am I feeling personally attacked right now?
No.
I reckon sometimes, say you have a client that's approached you to do a jewelry box and they don't want to pay for like really nice hinges. If you just get a small little brass butt hinge, like a real tiny one, and make it part of the feature, the design feature. But to have big butt hinges on a cabinet or something like that, it just looks a little bit clunky. But I just think there's a time and a place for it.
Yeah,
like you find an alternative, a concealed version that might cost you $10 more or something.
Okay, so you're talking... Yeah, okay. If
I would use concealed hinge 90% of the time, like you might see on a kitchen cabinet type of thing.
Gotcha.
I've used piano hinges on jobs where they're required. I've used butt hinges on a TV unit where they wanted to see the knuckles of the hinges to make it look like it was older than it actually was. Things like that. But practically, if you got the ability to adjust your door for whatever reason, it could be as simple as the fact that by the time you get your cabinet sitting in its place, the floor's crooked or something, something's happened, the cabinet's a little bit racked. If you can just tweak your hinge and make it fit the hole, then you're all good. That's not the case.
And over time, doors tend to move on hinges. So with butt hinges, you get no way of getting things back.
Yeah.
But yeah, hopefully that's really covered it. Like I said, it's not really a shit on Bunnings thing, but it's more about direct to supplier, like go to your hardware, like your specialist suppliers. You name drop the glue guru, the advice that I would give in Melbourne. Anybody looking for metals, I'm pretty sure I've name dropped them before, but if you're looking for brass, copper, bronze, any of those kind of things, George White in Clayton, they are... I feel as though they're the people that supply all the other brass suppliers, and they will sell to you the smallest amount.
That's awesome.
And they will cut it to size, and you're talking, you're probably paying 30% of what other suppliers charge. So, I don't think they do, no. I mean, they might ship for larger quantities, but I think it's an in-person thing, which, you know, is fairly common for trade. You've got to go and collect it yourself. But find that supplier for each of your things, create a spreadsheet.
Yep.
Just keep it there, but share it with your friends, share it with other makers and things. And
that's one way to
combat the big guys from taking over.
And, I would say don't be upset if you can't find what you're looking for on the first page of Google. These smaller, more specific companies are usually tucked away in several YouTube's Google searches. Like, you've got to just get the wording right, get exactly, like, do some bit of sleuthing. Their websites typically are a bit old and a bit crappier because that's not what their job is. Their job is selling the products to industry professionals, and they're not so big on self-advertising. That's typically the case. And so just do a bit of extra searching around and you'll find someone. It's just they might be hidden a little bit.
And in terms of hinges, where would you guys go? And I'm thinking, so everyone in Australia and New Zealand can benefit from this, not just locally.
You can either go straight to Hyphaline, like, I don't know. You'll find other suppliers, like somebody mentioned Dorset and people like that.
So you guys don't have a specific... So you don't go to the supplier and look for the hinge. You look for the hinge and then choose the supplier.
No, I go to the supplier first.
Yeah, it's probably different for Joe because he does more cabinet making than I would do. So I'm literally buying, I don't know, 6-8 hinges at a time or something like that. I'm not buying 20. But yeah, I would just say go straight to Hyphaline or something like that would be my...
Hyphaline over here is tricky in New Zealand. You can't buy direct without an account, and they're not easy to deal with. And the only way to buy without an account is to order from Mitre 10. So they've got that corner kind of marketed, which is a bit of a pain in the ass because then Mitre 10 goes and puts 40% markup on or whatever it is.
40%?
It's pretty outrageous.
Jesus.
So if I'm going to buy a hinge here, I either go direct to Blum, or there's a company called Fit, F-I-T, and they are a one-stop shop for cabinet makers. You're talking hinges, drawer runners, hardware, you name it, but they've got two or three brands of most things, so you can shop around a little bit depending on what it is that you want. And they're a pretty awesome shop. They're really good guys.
Okay, let's actually try to bring the listeners in on this, because so many things end up in the DMs of the Instagram account rather than the comments. But if you know a local supplier to you that's good for something, put their name, what they're good for, and where they're based in the comments below the post for this show.
We should sort out some kind of spreadsheet for all of us, and like have a running spreadsheet somehow that people could access.
That's a really good
idea. Sounds like you just volunteered, Joey.
Well, I don't know how to do spreadsheets.
Yeah, that's a great idea, actually. Let's look at building something like that, because that'll be a super helpful tool.
Yeah.
All right, I think we should move on to the next topic we discussed pre-show. Joey, do you want to talk us through it?
Jeez, okay. We've only briefly talked about this, so I will stumble my way through. There are industry-specific, what I guess we'll call industry-specific social media companies. Think of something like a Facebook mixed in with something like an Instagram kind of thing. There's one that is available here in New Zealand and Australia, and they're very pushy people. They want your money big time, and they kind of have a platform where they are combining. They're trying to join clients or potential clients with builders and designers and architects and tradesmen, and it's kind of a nice idea that it's industry specific. I'm struggling with that. The results don't seem to be coming from the amount of money they're charging. Now, I was kind of about 2 years ago, I think, I paid them $5,000 for their services, which included essentially making their another sub-website, which kind of attaches to their website. And the idea is that people are going to search on their platform and find somebody who fits them from a client's point of view. And I was just messaged this morning by somebody else in the industry saying, hey, look, these guys are hassling me for some money. They want to advertise. It seems like their base rate has now gone to about $7,000 for a year's worth of advertising, essentially, is what it is. And from what I hear, there is little work actually coming back to especially the smaller companies. I think maybe larger companies might benefit from this kind of thing in a different way. Like if you're a large builder, the cost for the advertising to find one more job that's going to maybe $1 million job for the cost of $7,000 probably is not bad return on investment. But for small guys, I can't see one job being worth that as an annual kind of advertising fee. So I just wanted to see what you guys think of the idea of paying for some industry-specific advertising, or that claims to be.
Insanity.
Yeah.
I've been approached by the same company year on year, and every single time I just say, add me to your do not call list. I think you're right. I think for builders to connect to architects, but the actual platform that they're on, I think it's behind a sign up as well. So you can't actually browse freely through their website unless you have a login, and that just adding that one extra step, I see it as a massive deterrent. It's just one other website you've got to remember the password for, or I do not find something like that attractive to me whatsoever. Like $7,000 a year. Like you'd be hoping to return, I would usually say at least doubling your investment with marketing is how I would look at it. Like if I spend $1,000 on Google Ads or something like that, I'd hope to get one decent job out of it, which might get me a $2,000 to $3,000 return. So if you're doing that for $7,000, you're having to look at $15,000 to $20,000 return on it. So it does need to be, like, for you, a full kitchen or something like that would nearly make it worthwhile. But
maybe,
I mean, it's cut your profit margin.
That's
so you're
right.
Being paid, but there's no profit in it.
It's like, I got the job, but it didn't really get paid. You know, it's that way up.
So definitely for furniture makers, I would say avoid it like the plague. Mm-hmm. There are other websites that we've spoken about, Handcrafted, before, which works for some makers. It doesn't work for others. But there's no cost to appear on a platform like that. You put your profile on, you put examples of your work. If people commission you to do work, Handcrafted take a commission. So something like that I have no issue with whatsoever. But when people are demanding money up front with no guarantee of any kind of results, it's starting to get into scam territory. You're literally, I can even see the people in their office phoning around, and it just, it makes me feel queasy, you know?
Yeah.
They're in a nice flash suit, you know, sipping a little espresso, like that kind of just, they have no connection to your business whatsoever. All they're doing is taking a fairly clean looking template website, adding a ton of images and backlinking to your website. And it's like, how much traffic are they claiming to get through that website that aren't just bots? Like,
well, that's what is interesting with this particular. So I paid them, I think it was 2 years ago, for a year's subscription. I'm somehow still on this site. And every time somebody clicks through onto your page or exposes your contact details or whatever, you get an email notification to say things are happening, which is interesting because it does give you a constant, or not so constant as the case may be, reminder of where traffic might be coming from. And I must say, not very often, maybe in the 2 years, I could probably look this up if I knew my password. I could probably look it up, but probably in 2 years, I've probably had 50 email website visits. And I paid $5,000 for that, and I don't think I got one job from it.
To play devil's advocate here.
Please do.
Are you not with a service like this? Are you not trimming the fat, so to speak? So anyone who's willing to pay that type of money is the real deal. Therefore, you get direct access to real players in the industry. I'm not saying this is my thoughts. This is just playing devil's advocate.
I understand that. But I think the people who are using the service to get work, tradespersons, they're paying the money. The clients aren't paying the money to view it. The potential clients. And so it may be very well that all these people on there are all, we are not tire kickers, but the clients can still very well be tire kickers. They're not guaranteed money in the pocket clients. They're still just shopping around.
Yeah, but you want to make sure that you are the cabinet installer for Bob the Builder, so he comes to you every time. So you're not.
You don't think you could reinvest that money? Say you had $7,000, pay $5,000 to someone to make a really schmick website, and then pay $2,000 in AdWords to promote it so that you come up when Bob the Builder searches for cabinet maker.
Or
don't know, and then it's got longevity to it as well. Like
the old school way to do that exact same thing for $0. Is to go and see a really nice house being built on the side of the road, and you walk up and you say, "Hey, Mr. Builder, this looks like a great place. This looks like excellent quality. I do excellent quality work. Here's my business card. Next time you want a kitchen made, why don't you give me a go at pricing it, and we'll see how I go."
Well, I was just about to say, with the old school mentality, I think what you're saying is spot on there. This whole model is very old school. It's an outdated way of doing it. We don't work like this anymore. It's the same as things like estate agents. We don't need a state agent anymore. We've got realestate.com. You, the purchaser, have the power. So I think, yeah, what you've said there is probably really important, is that, yeah, this model just doesn't have relevance anymore.
It seems like a third wheel, right? Or like a fifth wheel. Like it's just an extra step, I think. I don't know. Because people are so connected via social media already, would you want to sign up for another social media platform to find, let's say you were going to build a $3 million house.
Next weekend.
Yeah good. Would you sign up to an industry specific platform to find, maybe you'd browse it probably.
Pretty unlikely. I reckon most people, I'll speak for most millionaires, I was a millionaire myself. But most people will just seek advice from friends or, they will go to their builder and ask, who's a good cabinet maker or something like that. Like, so having that personal connection, like you said, Joey, going up and just introducing yourself, having hard copy things. We spoke about it years ago when I took all my marketing budget and I put it into producing hard copy folios, like A6 folios. Handed those out, I got a much better response than Google AdWords or something like that. And I'm actually just doing it now for the Ballarat Craft Lab thing that I'm exhibiting in. I'm now going and making A6 postcards. I haven't done this in years. Business cards, because I didn't really do that many exhibitions post-COVID. I didn't really rely on business cards, whereas now I'm seeing the value of it. And the fact that people are now savvy to QR codes again. You can have a physical thing with your details on it. They don't need to enter the details to scan a QR code on the card. It's so funny. Like, one of my original marketing materials, I reckon 2013 it was, I was printing out the same thing, A6 postcards for a trade show, and I had a QR code on one that linked to a video of, I think, one of my only YouTube videos, the Pinch Bench being made.
Yeah.
And I remember looking at that going in 2019. I'm like, when was the last time anybody scanned a QR code? And then something like COVID has now made people literate again to, there's a QR code. It's far easier than typing in www.sawdustbureau.com. I'll just scan it. And I can direct them to the exact page that I want. Like, if it's signing up for a newsletter, if it's product specific, if it's something like that. Like, it's that interface between an old school medium, like a hard copy thing, but you can instantly link it to easily updatable stuff on your website. If I change that page, if I change pricing or something like that, not that I have pricing on my website anymore, but it's always going to remain current, as opposed to printing a hard copy thing with a price on it or with a phone number on it. You know, just have a link to your socials, and then if you change your phone number down the line, you don't have to reprint a ton of business cards.
You're centralizing everything.
Yes, and that's, as an aside to that kind of technology thing, it's interesting for me growing up. My kids are 9 and 5, 8 and 5, 9 and 5, something like that. and so they're young, they're not stupendous with the spelling. So when they're trying to search something all the time, they're just voice searching everything. And like, that technology has been around for ages, but I've never done it. But the kids just like, bang, there's a microphone and just talk, and everything they want, it pops up exactly what they're searching for. And it's funny, like, the QR code is kind of like an in-between version of typing and just speaking to your device, and the thing happens. I don't know how long that technology will stick around for, or if talking is going to be the next thing, or if it's just because my kids are young and it's easier for them. But
I think it will be a generational thing. QR codes are for people who were in their 20s and 30s during COVID, who wanted to order from a restaurant and just got used to QR codes. I think you're right. I think the younger generation of kids won't use it. But that doesn't affect me, because I'm not targeting them as a client. Like,
exactly. They don't have any money anymore.
I want mum and dad.
It's funny, you were talking about that whole going to the builders, Joey, and actually being there physically present. That's probably a really great takeaway from this episode, is that's the the way to do it these days because of social media, because everyone can just sit behind an email and fire off 1,000. If you're the one person doing it face-to-face, you're light years ahead.
Well, think of the benefits of going to see a builder. One, you know, he's at least working locally to where you are. So that's good. The work's around is going to be in your neighborhood, so to speak. Two, if you give him a card or a brochure, he's got to put that somewhere in his pocket, on the front seat of his wagon. He's not just going to delete the email of some crazy person offering some services, because I get 1,000 emails a day of people trying to sell me something. And I just literally go click, 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 delete, gone, delete all, and I don't even read the thing. So if you're a builder and then you're like, this job just came up, we need this thing made. Oh, look, I've got this brochure just sitting in my glove box or whatever on the dashboard of the van. I'll just give this guy a call. You're in his face.
Yeah. Do you remember, again, I can't remember if we covered this, but when I was talking about folios and brochures and things like that, it was a home builder in America in the 60s, I think, that were doing prefabricated homes. I can't remember the name of it. God, I wish I remembered a lot of the stuff I learned in architecture school. 1950s, 1960s, prefabricated or modular homes. And they came up with the idea of making their folio smaller. So rather than having a big brochure, they made it smaller. So
it was on the 50s.
So don't, exactly. It sits on top. So, you know, when the house gets cleaned, the books get stacked up, that folio sits on the top.
Yeah.
So, yeah, that's why I did A5 and A6. I'd never go bigger than that.
Mm.
Yep.
All right.
Yeah.
Got out.
let's leave it there. I also want to, before we go, I want to bring up a topic for next week and leave this as a bit of a cliffhanger. The high chair that I made for a client recently, it was made for kids, and an adult sat on it and the seat broke. I'm not in trouble legally, but I really want to hear your guys' take on this in the next episode.
What the hell? All right.
We'll leave it there.
Okay. Fair enough. Cliffhanger.
Cool. All right, everyone. Good show. I hope there was a lot of takeaways as well, particularly with the supplier story. But we'll get something together. Go ahead, put your preferred suppliers in the Instagram posts, because that'll benefit everyone. And then, maybe we can get together some kind of a list of what we use, and people can add to it, and we can go from there.
Yep. Seems good. That. All right, everyone.
Cool. Awesome.
See ya.
Cool. Have a good week.
See you guys. Catch you in a couple of weeks.